yourself on Skid Row.
Are we gonna stay around this town and let what others said come true? Jesus, man, I'm gonna get up if you get off of me. I'll get up if you wanna understand me. I'll get up if you really wanna help me. I'll get up, but in Jesus' name, I'm gonna get up. The people who are talking to me, are we going to hang around this town? And then we'll never be sick, come true. Good for nothing, they all figure. Just a boy, a strong, a shooter, a jigger. Are we gonna stand for that? Or is that really what we say? I'm your brother, and she's standing in your glory. I hope you don't mind if I tell the whole story. Pardon me, sister, I know you think you've come a long way. I know you think you've come a long way. As I walk the streets and see a road, my hands ain't shaking, but my legs ain't trembling. I turn the corner and keep through the trash. Look up at the street sign, says San Julian. Look back down at me, got contact with his brother. And now I'm feeling like I'm standing somewhere I shouldn't be. He looks around, a thousand of his friends, they raise their crack pipes to the lips and blends them simultaneously. Tell me, yeah, I'm getting high, I'm feeling good. And sister, don't you knock until you try. Now I'm standing for visions of crooked politicians and Michigan reps, lining their greedy pockets. Social justice, and we know that's not how it's supposed to be. So if you can get up, stand up, but there's a solution depending on you and me. Baby, people who are talking, are we going to hang around this town? And whatever we say, go
Darker Than Blue by Willis and Shantae, who will be performing in concert at the Exchange Sunday, March the 25th, 2012 at 3 o'clock p.m. The Exchange is located at 114 West 5th Street, downtown Los Angeles. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, and I'm in the studio with my co-host, Mr. Tyrone Robinson. This week, we will be talking about jobs in the 1992 L.A. Rebellion with Georgiana Williams and K. Unsumi of News and Letters, and an in-studio performance from the play Nailheads by Miss Andrea Ross. Georgiana, K. Andrea, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you, Melvin.
All right.
Now, I want to jump right into our discussion of the 1992 L.A. Rebellion and how it relates to job. But first, I would like to read something that would give us some background and focus for our discussion. April the 29th, 2012, marked the 20th anniversary of the 1992 Los Angeles Rebellion, when the barbaric beating of Rodney King by four LAPD officers was videotaped and shown on national TV, the youths of South Central Los Angeles and other impoverished areas could no longer contain the rage of the constant daily police harassment, brutality, and racism. The same four police officers were acquitted in the trial in Simi Valley, which is a suburban white community with many police residing there. For the black and brown youth, a lifetime of Jim Crow racism and daily humiliation by the police expressed itself in rage when the verdict of not guilty was announced on April the 29th, 20 years ago. The city erupted into 3 days of militant protests, fires, and looting. Over 12 1,000 people were arrested and over 50 people were killed by the National Guard and police. At the intersection of Florence and Normandy, a white truck driver named Reginald Denning was pulled from his truck and beaten by angry black youth. For weeks, the media focused on this incident as if these youths were to blame for the entire revolt. The prosecutor stacked a number of charges on defendants Lance Parker, Damian Williams, Keith Watson, and Anton Miller. There were three separate court trials for these defendants. Damian Williams was especially targeted by the media and remains incarcerated. Reginald Denny had no avenging motive towards these youths and was never called in as a witness for the prosecution. The conditions for these youth in blighted and underserved neighborhoods have not improved much since 1992. The effects of the high unemployment rate have resulted in many social disruption, constant police repression, and today, massive prison industry complex. On Saturday, April the 28th, there will be a memorial gathering at Florence and Normandy Avenue. Immediately following, there will be a block party on 71st Street. The keynote speaker would be Maxine Waters. There would be poetry, music, and a multicultural potluck. So join us from 12 to 5 to celebrate this event and to bring attention to what's happening in the community now. You are cordially invited to attend a unity rally in remembrance of this 1992 Los Angeles civil unrest. So for those who would like to be involved with the program, you can contact Ms. Georgiana Williams, whose phone number is 310-590-6468. 310-590-6468. Now, this is where I want to start our discussion. First of all, I'd like to throw out the question, what is the relationship to the lack of jobs and after-school programs to the 1992 Los Angeles Rebellion?
There are no jobs in South LA. They took them all to China, to Mexico, and every place else. The only thing we got in South LA is rock cocaine. And it's going to take some brothers and sisters like you and I to get it out of our neighborhood. Since the rebellion, they made many promises. Congresswoman Maxine Waters started a community bill and gave a lot of young men a chance at a new life by teaching them how to be young men. But now very few men, young men over there is involved with Miss Waters' class. I go over about once a month and cheer them up and talk to them. But every time I go, there's somebody going to jail. And every time I go, I see the police circling the block, and I always ask, is the police doing the same thing? They say, yeah, I left. I thought if I would leave that street, that the police would stop harassing the young men. Because I had many talks with them. I said, you accuse my son, and he's in prison. Why are you harassing these young men? Had they had a part in the rebellion at Florence and Norman, I said, they would be in prison with my son. So I decided to leave.
Tell us who your son is.
My son is Damian Williams. They called him football. But the same thing is still going on. I was there a few days ago. Who did I see? The police. When I was over there telling them that we was coming on April 28th and have a unity rally, and we was going to try to heal the hurt that has been going on from generation to generation. Our young men that don't get a good education, even the ones who go to school, a lot of the kids over there I know graduated from high school and cannot read. When Damian and Keith and Antoine and all was in, going to court, I said, let's do a letter writing campaign to the judge. I had one young man who could write a letter, and he didn't even make a capital I. That's how bad the school is over there.
Yeah,
we don't have no business over there. They got business, but they're not black owned. But it's going to take more than me to make a fuss. The whole community has to cooperate and say, well, if you bring a job in this community, you have to hire some of our young men and women.
That's right.
Before I left, I was going to the places and asking them to hire someone, a Mexican or an African American. I know that Molly Bell in Compton was telling people to give African Americans a job, like the ones who have the $1 Chinese food and 1 hour photo, you know. Mm-hmm. We're asking them to give somebody in the community a job. But if you go back to Florence and Normandy, you will see that the liquor store's still there. They got a Chinese fast food. You'll see a Subway. The 76 station is still there. And they have the Chevron station. But go in and see if you see any African-American people working.
Now, who represents that area?
When I was there, it was Mark Ridley Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
But he's the supervisor now. And then I was told that Bernard Parks was the councilman. I don't know who's the councilman over there.
Okay, is there any job training programs?
No, the only job training we had was community bill with Congresswoman Maxine Waters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's no after school activities like it was, say, an example, 30 or 40 years ago. No, I moved over. I lived over there 35 years. Okay, when in 1971, when I moved over there, there were after school programs for the young people, because I know I sent some girls to Fremont to be nurses' aides.
Mm-hmm.
They had some after school programs years ago, and especially for the young ladies that got kids before they got out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
They had a program where you could go and you could be a registered nurse or you could be a beautician.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have any program on there now. There's a saying down south, Melvin, I'm sure you're familiar with it. Mm-hmm. You got a rude hog or die a poor pig.
Yeah, for me.
Yeah, they used to have the SYEP programs. They used to have mm-hmm. a program called CETA. All those were after school programs that I believe Ronald Reagan cut those programs
in the
80s. Because they needed to get ready for this industrial complex that we call the prison system today.
Right.
Let's talk a little about that. Before we get into that, let me ask you, what is the atmosphere of the gang situation in that area now?
It's not active anymore because, I go over there and I talk to the ones that used to be the gang leader, and now he's just as sweet and nice as he could be. They have a group called Ceasefire.
Yeah, Ceasefire.
And mm-hmm. all the brothers that used to be in the gang mm-hmm. has educated all the brothers and sisters that it's a waste of time to kill you someone that look like you.
Yeah.
So that I know that the A-trays are not, they're not violent anymore.
Well, let me ask Tyrone, you want to say something?
In the wake of the riots and the rebellion, the Crips and the Bloods announced a truce to end intergang violence. The call for a truce reflected the growing intolerance among all segments of Los Angeles community towards drive-by shootings, gang crimes, and gang violence. So,
but yes. That didn't last. They broke the truce.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me ask this. What is the, I'm going with your person, I'm going to open it up to, feel free to jump in too,
please,
if you have something to say. What is the relationship between the increase in the prison industrial complex and the economic conditions in the communities we find over there in Florence and Normandy?
I know that the prisons are packed because mm-hmm. I go to visit my son. They building more prisons. We don't need no more prisons. We need some schools and we need some jobs. We need better education. We need some training centers. We don't need all those prisons.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you want to say something?
Well, there's a direct relationship. If you don't have work, what are you going to do? You know, you got to make a living somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And
but you don't have to commit a crime to make a living.
What I understand, you know, I was reading old news and letters, and this person that wrote, this black man, working man that wrote for News and Letters, on the LA Rebellion, he said that the Bloods and Crips truce was in March, the month before. But what I heard, when the truce were breaking, was that the police wanted the truce to be broken. They didn't. They did they want it want to be peace. Broken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they went out to and the projects and what you remember they was having that big game truth celebration, and they went. The police went to the projects and Watson broke it up.
Okay, now it's the second part about after we come back from our community calendars, we really gonna try to reach out and talk about some creative solutions for this. I see I got a couple more things that I want to get off into, but Andrea, did you want to say something? Oh, it's not.
I just have one comment regarding the prison structure in this nation, and I think it's a sad testament to say that the number one business in this nation
is, lock up
is private prisons. That is the number one business generating capital in this nation, private prisons, and that is a sad testament to our great country. Why not rehabilitation? Why not schools? Why not intermediate intervention before kids get to the point where they have to don a weapon and feel like they have to take someone's life? I'm talking 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds, because as most of us know, children are very savvy nowadays. They do not have to be 12, 15, and 18 before they know about gangs and guns and violence. So my pitch is get them while they're young. Get them while they are young.
Georgetown, let me ask you this. What is the involvement of the churches and the community organizations in that area?
I don't know that the only church that I know that was involved was Bishop McMurray and Greater Bethany, Pastor Andrews, and Faith United Methodist Church. Those were the only two that I know that was involved.
Now tell me this. Is it any after-school programs in that area for young people?
No.
Like, none at all?
No.
Nothing at all. Okay. Let me ask you this. Let's talk a little about what you was doing, where you were when this rebellion jumped off.
I was at work.
Okay, let's talk a little about that and your reaction to it. And
well, I wasn't surprised because I had been to Simi Valley as a visiting nurse because I was doing home health visits.
Yeah.
And a patient let me know that I wasn't welcome. So if I wasn't welcome as a nurse, you can imagine what kind of personalities they have and what they think of us. So when they moved it to Simi Valley, I knew they were going to be found not guilty.
Without a doubt. Now, Damien, at that time, he was, 18, 19?
Yeah.
Yeah, let us know about Damien. What was Damien like before all of this
growing
happened?
Up?
Yes.
We spent a long time down south with my mom. She was sick. Damien went to private schools, private Christian school, Hawthorne Christian. And then Marcus Garvey opened up.
Okay, he was part of Marcus Garvey.
Yeah,
also.
He went to the Marcus Garvey School.
Yeah, over on Slauson.
Great.
And then he was very good in football, and he wanted to go to the public schools to see if he could be a professional football player the last 2 years in school. And that's when he started hanging around with the neighborhood kid.
Okay.
Can I say something? I heard, I think, Georgiana, you were saying that when he was growing up in the neighborhood hanging around, he was very generous. The kids never had money, and if he had 10 bucks, the kids would get it.
Yeah.
So what was it like those 2 years that when he did go to public school, what was his, how did he change?
From very, very kind and gentle. It was like he was lost. It was a whole new thing for him. What went on in the public schools, they didn't have it in the private schools.
What is it that they had in the public schools that they didn't have?
Baggy pants for one. Talking back was two.
Okay.
He never had homework. Was three. But the football coach kept them busy practicing football after school. He just seemed to lose the interest once he left the private school and went to the public school. He didn't have no interest in anything but football.
That might be because the curriculums in the public schools are just a farce.
I'll just be honest with you.
In this neck of the woods, it is a farce. What we know public education to be is not what it should be here in our community, and therein lies the crux of the problem.
I agree, because my granddaughter was also taken out of private school and put in public school. She never studied and stayed on the honor roll the whole 2 years she was in a public school. And she graduated early because she turned 16 May the 4th and graduated 2 weeks later from the 12th grade. It is a big difference in the public schools and in the private school. So I say out there to her mother, if you can afford to keep your kid in a private school, you forget football, you forget basketball, you keep them in the public school, because once you let go, it's a big change going to take place.
Okay, let's take a little break and, for our community calendar, and then we'll come back and have a roundtable discussion like we're doing now on our subject's job in the L.A. Rebellion.
This is the community calendar for March. On Sunday, March 18, 2012 at 3 p.m., Drama Stage Qumran presents Donald Bakir, a special book signing of I Too Can Create Light, a memoir in music, poetry, and prose by the author of the novel, Crips, and co-writer of the movie adaptation, South Central. Special musical guests, The Passion Band, hosted by yours truly, Andrea Ross and Melvin Ishmael Johnson. The location, at The Exchange, 114 West 5th Street in Los Angeles. This is a free event, and all are invited to attend. For more info, call 323-850-4436. On Sunday, March 25th, 2012 at 3 p.m., Drama Stage Qumran presents Willis and Shantae, featured in a mini concert. There will be performances of open mic as well. The location, The Exchange at 114 West 5th Street in Los Angeles. And this too is a free event, and all are invited to attend. For more info, call 323-850-4436. And finally, on Tuesday, March 27th, 2012, at 9:30 to 10:50 a.m., Drama Stage Qumran will be on the campus of USC doing a performance of Nailheads for the Department of American Students and Ethnicity. If you would like to attend, please call 323-850-4436. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the info to dramastage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Erlene Anthony. And once again, our call number for the show is 800-893-9562. And now, back to our host.
Thank you, Andrea Ross. Now we're back with our guests, Georgiana Williams and Kay Umsumi of News and Letters, key organizers for the upcoming Memorial and Block Party coming up on Saturday, April the 28th, 2012, from 12 to 5 p.m. at the corner of Florence and Normandy, the center point of the 1992 L.A. Rebellion. Now, I want to open this back up to a round table of discussions, and I want to try to get in, look at some solutions to a lot of these things that's happening out here in the community. First thing I want to talk about is how can we get the churches and the community organizations more involved in these underserved areas like Florence and Normandy. You want to take off, Kay?
Well, okay. Today, we have an economic crisis, and it's a crisis not only, it's a largely a crisis of unemployment. And a lot of people that have job have part-time job. These companies that hire people for part-time, they don't have to pay benefits, health care, nothing. So they want to have part-time workers. It's the nature of the world that we live in, the system that we live in. And I could go into details on why, but meanwhile, we need to change the system where everybody could have a job. I could see that if everybody had a job and we produce what we need, not what companies make money for, but what the people need, and the people decide by committee.
Well, that's great. We're gonna talk about the job thing in details in a minute.
Yeah.
But I want to know, how do we call these? Because one thing that they always tell me about the communities that I see in all of these inner cities, you're gonna have churches and liquor stores, bunch of those everywhere, all around. So what I'm seeing, because I know when I was coming up, or early, the black church, especially the black church in the community, was a very important organizational structure. Now out here, we got a bunch of churches, we got so many community organizations that I just can't name as so many of them. So what I'm trying to say is, how can we get these organizations and these churches and stuff to step up? You know, to step up to the plate. Let's talk about that for a while. Georgiana, you want...
We can go knocking on doors at the churches. And we've already asked in the community when I was over there, asked the owners who had business in our community to give someone a job. It doesn't always work. Some of them do and some of them don't. And then we have a problem with our young men and young women. They don't want to work for minimum wages, so I think what we really need to do is get our kids educated so that they can qualify for a good job. Mm-hmm. That's the main thing. They need to go back to school. We need some good teachers so our kids can read and write and spell. You know, if you found them a good job, they can't. I'm not putting my brothers and sisters down in no way. But I'm just saying from my own experience, in South LA, and all the kids that used to be at my house, I was teaching them how to cook, let them wash, make them take a bath, give them a haircut. I tell our kids need an education.
They need life skills.
Right. They need to know how to do something.
Yes, they do.
So, you know, if you give them a job and they can't read instructions, how they gonna do it?
Mm-hmm.
We gotta get on them schools. We from kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
These kids need to learn to read and write and know math.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to talk about that in a minute. Tyrone.
Okay. Let's put it this way. I've been here for 52 years. I spent 8 years in the military, and I've seen what our government does to other countries, and our government is doing to our country what it does to other countries. Okay? In other countries, they call them guerrillas. You come here to the United States, they're called gangs. If you die in the Mideast, you're considered a martyr. You're not considered a murdered person or a murdered individual. Our government is good at going in and starting stuff and problems and not providing any solutions for them. What you have to look at in the inner city, I believe, is you have to look at the problem of greed. You take care of that greed problem, because every church, it seems, in the South Central area is out for themselves, okay? It's not like they want to work together to come up with a common solution. They seem to be building schools all over the place in South Central. But what kind of education are the students getting out of those schools?
Right.
They're just pushing them through to make numbers, okay? The end product is fodder for the jail systems, the prison systems, okay? Back in 83, thoughtful observers agreed that racial intolerance and siege mentality by many police officers towards the communities were supposed to protect and serve, use excessive force, police abuse, racism, poverty, lack of opportunity, crime, drugs, and loss of hope in the inner city. This was back in 1983. when they came up with these reports. The conditions still exist. There's no change.
Mm-hmm. Emma.
Andrea?
And that therein lies the problem. There is no change. How do you say to a bootless man, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and you have no shoes on? So it's left to our wiles to try to come up with creative solutions for our own children. They need rehabilitative programs when they are liberated from the penal system, that most of the time they're just recycled, institutionalized, and it's a revolving door. So when they come out, they have nothing else but to resort to the crimes that got them there in the first place.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you need an intervention right there. And even prior to getting to prison, the young children, and I cannot preach that highly enough, young children ages 5 to 12, you got to get them early. You got to have hope early. So when you do become a young adult, you can make a rational choice and decision.
Okay, we're going to talk about that in details in a minute. I don't want to leave this thing yet about churches and community centers, but I don't want to put it just on churches, because I remember a lot of cities on the East Coast and the Midwest, like Chicago, Detroit, Washington, D.C. At one time, the Nation of Islam was very, very strong in terms of being in the community and so involved in the community. So I just don't want to put it on churches and Christian churches. I think religious organizations as a whole have an obligation also. And let me ask you this. What is the involvement of the groups like the Nation of Islam in these areas, especially over there?
Well, I noticed that they take a brother off the street, educate him, and clean him up, and teach him how to take care of himself. They don't mind selling papers. They don't mind getting on the corner selling pies. But the average black man's not going to go on the corner and sell no pies.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to have something to offer them.
Yeah. Structure for that.
An example, they took BF, what was that, Goodyear, that's where the post office is on Florence and Gage.
Mm-hmm.
They used to make tires, now it's the post office.
Mm-hmm.
And how many African Americans now can pass that post office test?
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me bring up the next point that I want to throw out for discussion. Because I stay pretty close to the downtown area. I used to stay in the Skid Row area. Now I stay pretty close to the MacArthur Park area. And one thing that I've noticed in that area is the couple of years that I've been staying there is that they have an excellent after-school program called OLA, right? It's about 98% Hispanic, even though an African-American is the executive director. And it grows and grows and grows, very involved in the community. And they take these little young people, volunteers, teach them computer training and all. They got a Laker room up in there where the Lakers get involved and all that kind of stuff. What would it take to put an after-school program right in these areas that we're talking about, like Florence and Normandy? A same kind of program, just what we was talking about early, what you was talking about, how important it is to grab these little youngsters when they're young, to teach them how to read and become computer literate and all that kind of stuff. What do you think it would take to put a program there in
some
these
parents
communities?
Getting together with some community people, some politicians and the churches, the entire community need to get together.
Mm-hmm.
And create and get some kind of after school program.
Mm-hmm. What you think, Tyrone?
Well, the program you're talking about, OLA, I believe their focus is different overall. I don't know how to say this without being politically incorrect. It seems that a majority of the people that attend OLA are Hispanic.
Mm-hmm. That's okay.
That's okay. I just feel that Hispanic culture has a different outlook on family. than most black families in the inner city. They stay tighter. To me, it seems that there's no more grandmothers.
Yeah, extended
families. There's no more extended families or grandmothers in the black community that, you know, used to be there to kind of keep things together, to play that role.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I look at the word greed. If you have organizations in the inner city that plan on doing stuff like this, they're just going to have to leave their egos and they have to leave the dollar and cents at the door and just be able to go in and say, okay, this is what we're going to do, but we're not going to line our pockets with the money or the donations. You know, we're going to make sure that our community gets this. You know, we're not going to, you know, put this in our garage or put this in our storage unit, you know, like a lot of people do or a lot of organizations do. But we're not going to name those. Go ahead.
But one, and then I want to open it up to Andrea. One similarity that I do notice, and you're definitely right about the extended family thing, but that's something that used to be a central part of the African-American culture,
especially
everywhere but Los Angeles, as far as I'm concerned. But, but let's, the MacArthur Park area, the similarity to the MacArthur Park area to, say, for example, the Florence and Normandy area is that one time, you're talking about a gang, I mean, 18th Street, I mean, it used to be so gang
infested
over there. You didn't even want to ride through there, even on the bus, just traveling through. And I think what they were able to do, and that's one of the other points I want to bring up about this area, is because that's where Earlene is at now, right, at the neighborhood council meeting, is do they have a neighborhood council in that Florence and Normandy area? If they do, then where is it? Or what? Who's involved with it? Do anybody know anything about that?
Whether I guess I'll have to run next time.
Yes.
Well, you know what, Melvin? I'm thinking about when Ola came into being and that whole MacArthur Park Renaissance started to kick in. That was following the breakup with Rampart Division when they had all that stuff come up with the cops all being involved with the drugs and all the local gangs, 18th Street or whatever. And once that problem was neutralized, Ola shows up, the park cleans up, the city, that area becomes family oriented once again. So maybe you have to look at what kind of corruption is going on in South Central still.
Exactly.
Who's paying who to keep what's going on there going on?
And where are all the funds?
Exactly.
Where are all the funds?
Exactly.
From the city, from the state, from the federal government.
Exactly.
Where have they been misdirected to? Because obviously they are not finding their way to where they were meant to be.
You know, back during the Watts riots, because I grew up in Compton, Kennedy had a little thing called the Model Cities Program following the riots. He put money into the city of Compton. This was back in the 60s. That money did not show up until the late 70s, early 80s, with the redevelopment of Compton Boulevard.
What happened to that program, No Child Left Behind?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Now, also, let me say this about the next point that I want to move into. And I want to bring up something because we was involved just a few months ago with the prison hunger strike, where they wanted to call attention to the inhuman condition that was
tortured. Yeah, and the prison nasty, dirty.
Yeah.
The guards mistreat the inmates.
Exactly. And what I wanted to bring up, because when I used to sit down and talk to some of the people in the planning committees, and I wanted them to expand it farther than that, because most of the people, it was a known fact for a long time that these high-level security housing units that they call SHU, what was going on can be defined as torture. But I wanted to take it farther. I want you to take it to the extent that all of these young men who have gotten caught up and they find themselves at the level one and level two section, these are the ones that are coming back to the community. See, and this is what I want to talk about now. How can we push for job training program? Not only job training, but retraining programs. Because we got a lot of young men out here in the community that need to become computer literate because of the high-tech society that we live in now.
Okay, Bella, yeah. But they used to train them in prison.
That's right. They until they got rid of
them. Because I know some brothers came out with a PhD. And but all those classes that they had in the prison, they done got rid of them. All the activities they had outside, the gym activity, and the family visits, all that's been taken away. They don't have anything now but a shower a couple times a week.
Yeah.
You can't send a box anymore. You have to buy from
commissary.
They stole, and they're charging double for everything.
Yeah. It's become a business.
Yeah.
That's
a
what
very
I said.
Big business.
The number one business in this nation is prison.
Right.
Incarceration.
They're getting richer and richer.
And richer and richer. And don't look at your phone bill. Please, we're not even going to go there with the phone bills.
Well, what I would like to know.
System.
Go ahead.
Are we supposed, we're not the number, we're supposed to be the lowest number in the United States, right? If we're the lowest number, how come we got more African American men in the prison? Well, not now, because we got the black and the brown.
Yeah.
But the Spanish-speaking brothers now are number one. But a few years ago, they had more African-American men in prison than anybody. So I said, if we're not the minority, how can we have so many men in prison?
That's right.
Well, that goes back to what we were talking about earlier. This is the best way for our government, for our government to come in and bust up the family unit. If you understand what I'm saying, whatever happened to the atomic family, the mother, the father, you know, little Joey or little Betty, the two-car garage,
that's not in every pot.
It's non-existent now. The United States has turned into a consumer. We don't make anything anymore. And if we do make stuff, it's crap, you know. And that's why we have all of our businesses and all our jobs have gone overseas.
Outsourced,
exactly.
The manufacturing base that used to be the staple of the middle class here in the United States has been outsourced to every other country but our country.
Okay, but before we move, I want to jump right back to the memorial event comeback. We want to just highlight a few of these things about the memorial and the block party.
I won't
tell me about the...
Oh, Pastor Andrews passed away. Pastor Andrews was the pastor of Faith United.
Yes.
The police, the sheriff, everybody told him not to associate with me and my friends, that we were violent, we were drug dealers, we just everything you can name, they told Pastor Andrews. But he stuck with us till the end. So he passed away, and I want to remember him.
Okay.
Antoine Miller was killed. Lance Parker died. Dorothy Freeman was the chair. She died. Miss Petty helped me cook. She died. So we're going to remember all of them Saturday, April 28th. And then we come into our old block where I used to live. And we're all going to cook. We're going to have poetry. We're going to have music. And we're just going to have people just voice their opinion. What can we do to make a change ourselves?
That's right.
You can't depend on the politicians. You can't depend on the school. So we got to do like we did when I first moved over there. You was everybody's mama. Everybody looked after everybody's kid. If you had to work, then I kept your kids. When it was time for me to go to work, you kept my kids. We got to go back to it. Because if you depend on somebody else to help you,
get done.
You can just forget
it. We need that grassroots organization.
I left the neighborhood in the 90s. And every time I go back, I want to cry. It's going down. When I first moved over there, it was mostly white people. It was considered a middle-class neighborhood. And then they all moved out. It was all black. And now most of the blacks are gone, and it's brown people. And no one is encouraging the brown people to keep the neighborhood up. When I was there, I used to come home every morning and make them clean the street up. I said, we ain't going to have no baby kids over here running around nasty and dirty.
That's right.
And I would make them clean up. They had to keep their kids clean. They had to comb their kids' hair. If they didn't have no food, there was always some pig feet at my house. And I just looked after that whole block. And if you go over there, they'll tell you I looked after that block.
I did the same thing.
But now when I go back over there, I want to cry. That block is going down.
Yes. Okay, Georgiana and Kate, thank you very much. Now, thank you very much. Really enjoyed. Think we covered a lot of ground here. Now we're going to move into our last section, Voices from the Ether portion of the show.
If it's Monday night, about 15 minutes to 9, then you're listening to Voices from the Ether. My in-studio guests tonight are Miss Andrea Ross, poet, writer, and illustrator of children's books. And joining her tonight will be Melvin Ishmael Johnson. They are going to be reading from the play Nailheads. Nailheads, the play, is the result of a project that was started at the USC Peace Center a few years ago. And the idea was to collect building nails, the kind of nails that are used in the construction of a house. And the number of nails that were collected were close to what, Melvin? 130,000, 140,000?
Yeah, 80 to 100,000 nails. We collected 80,000.
Right. The number of nails represented the number of homeless that sleep on the streets of Los Angeles on any given night. So what Melvin and Andrea are going to perform here is an excerpt from the play, and Andrea is going to perform the character of Feminine Head, and Melvin is going to be the social worker. So, with further ado, Miss Andrea.
Thank you. And I am the Feminine Nailhead. And oh yes, I do exist on Skid Row. I symbolize the women of Skid Row seeking to keep our heads above the water, seeking to raise our kids, be good mothers, and watch them grow up. We got families, and we love our children, and we gotta be strong to survive the nickel. You see, it's a struggle to keep our femininity down here. Skid Row don't discriminate by gender. It's hard on males and females, that's a fact. And don't think you know me just because I live down here. I'm trying to survive. I'm trying to better myself. You don't know me. I have dreams and aspirations just like you. I love children, family life, and all that stuff you see on TV.
You better get out of that TV world and get real.
Who said that?
I said that. And you know who I am. I'm the one who looks out for the children who can't look out for themselves.
Well, I take care of my children myself.
Same old song. Until that guy called, until you hit that pipe.
I don't hit no pipe.
How did you get down here in the first place?
I'm not making any excuses.
Are you in a program?
Let me tell you something, Mr. Social Worker. I'm down here because I have made some bad choices. But I'm not going to let you beat me down with your negative thoughts and your too many forms. You just trying to find out about me because you don't know about yourself.
Oh, what do you mean?
I have faith in God and in the goodness of human beings. And believe me, this situation, it is just a temporary test, and I do plan to pass.
Now, I am the social worker for the recovery zone. We tried to separate the wheat from the tares, and I must admit that sometime we uproot the wheat trying to pull up the tares. I'm here to document and evaluate what is happening down here. How else can we find the answer? I must ask the right question, trying to find the solution to the puzzle called Skid Row. Let me see now. 80,000 homeless. 30,000 beds. That just don't add up. Now, Skid Row is a puzzle made up of many pieces. Pieces like babies, children, the elderly and the poor, the sane and the insane, the good and the bad, believers and non-believers, a laboratory, the wheat and the tares. The failure of the tares to support the wheat. Time allows the wheat to grow, get strong and separate from the tares. Now feed and nourish the individual. The individual would nourish the family. The family would nourish the community. The community would nourish the nation. And the nation would nourish the world.
Thank you, Melvin. That was an excerpt from the play Nailheads. Well, we have a few minutes left, and as part of the celebration, you want to call it, the remembrance of the riots, just some footnotes. We know what happened to Reginald Denny and the ensuing, but there were some other people involved that day. Reginald Denny, the Anglo truck driver, was pulled from his truck and beaten at the intersection. A news helicopter also captured a beating on a videotape of a Fidel Lopez, a contractor and Guatemalan immigrant. He was beaten on videotape near his home near the same intersection. Chow Sao Cho, an immigrant from Hong Kong, was dragged from his car, beaten and robbed on videotape. The question is, what happened to those perpetrators? Why didn't they get as much
publicity?
Yeah, as
Reginald Denny.
Exactly, as Miss Williams' son did. To close out, I found a little poem, and it's a poem written by a young man who's probably not that young anymore. The gentleman's name is Grinnett. The poem is called Twilight, and this is the piece that's based on his reflections from the riots. Twilight. Excuse me. I am a human that lives in this country. My culture and background is of diversity, but people in this country told me about pursuit of happiness, freedom, and liberty. So can I get some peace up in this piece? Because in 1992, signs were held up by my peeps. Protests screamed, no justice, no peace. L.A. scorched in degrees by fires and riots and bloody beats. Broken glass, broken faces, broken hearts in broken streets. Broken purposes, broken futures, broken dreams in L.A. streets. Please, described in one word, I'll say mayhem. Described in a sentence, I threw the world was gonna end. I thought the world was gonna end. That's so much better. In this case, no justice had a verdict named destruction. Destroy buildings, blacks, lats, and Koreans. Punishment set from the Po now to life. Set no bell set, just serve the time. 1992 was struck in twilight. Fingers hit triggers while eyes hit cries. Bullets hit bodies while smoke hit the skies. God couldn't see what was happening. Smoke covered his vision. God couldn't hear what was happening with all the screaming. He couldn't listen. I've heard actions speak louder than word tones. That means the riots spoke in the microphone. Here's a Maxine Waters quote. Riots is how the people spoke. By fists and gats and by mouths and throats. It's no joke. Violence is how we got the attention, cuz how else would anybody listen to us? So with that, I'd like to return the show to Melvin Ishmael Johnson. That concludes our visit to the ether tonight.
Hey, thank you, Tyrone. I'm going to get around for some final comments. Let's start with you, Georgiana. We still got a few minutes.
Thank you for having me. And it's one question I always ask. How many white men they have in prison for the wrong that he did to the black? I hope to see you April 28th. And let's try to heal what happened years ago and get a good future for the future kids that are coming. 10 years from now, 20 years from now, some of our kids will be in the bank. If God is good, we'll have another black president. And I sure want him to be able to read and write. God bless. And remember, Jesus loves you. I do too. And there's not a thing you can do about it. God bless.
All right. Okay.
Well,
I just say come out to the event on April 28th. That's it.
Have a good time.
Yeah.
Andre. You got a phone call. You actually have a phone call, Mel.
Oh, we got. Oh, let's see who we got on the phone.
I just said come out to the event on
there. Hi. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Or let me cut this down. I can't hear you.
Oh, let's get you on the phone.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. Oh, my. I'm calling for Miss Andrea.
Andrea's here.
Yes.
Hi, Andrea.
Hi. Hi.
I wanted to know, my name is Talitha, and I just wanted to know, like, how many females do you actually come in contact with on the skit row, and how long have you been doing the nail head thing?
You know what? Statistics don't bear out exactly how many females we have down on Skid Row. They really don't have an accurate count.
I mean, like, how many do you guys, like help from time to time? And how many do you guys actually interact with?
They don't keep count.
Well, once a month, we do a clothing drive where we open up our doors to the exchange and we give away clothes to the community. And we do that the last Sunday of each month. And you'd be surprised how many people are so thankful, how many females with children come in and are very grateful for what we do. And if I had to guess, I would say well over a third of the people residing on Skid Row are females and children. So we still have a lot of work to do. And thank you for calling in, and thank you for your question.
No problem. I think what you guys are doing is an amazing job. I actually had the chance to come and see one of your plays at the college in L.A., and I really enjoyed it. So keep up the good work, and I wish you guys all the best.
Thank you so much, and thank you for calling in. We do appreciate it.
God bless.
That was your comment anyway, Andrea. That's great.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Tyrone, you want to say any? We should
stick
a minute.
I still go back to Gil Scott-Heron. The revolution will not be televised.
It will be live.
It will be live. So, that's it, L.A.
Okay, I would like to extend a special thanks to our in-studio guest, Georgiana Williams, Kay Usumi, Andrea Ross, one of our guests, Mr. Lee Shaw, my co-host, Tyrone Robinson, and a special thanks to Jeremy Sonia in the Skid Row Studios. You can check out our past shows of the Qumran Report on iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, skidrow.la, or www.dramastage-qumran.org. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report, and I leave you with the song that opened the show, Darker Than Blue, by Willis and Shante.
What does that mean?
Are we gonna stay around this town and let what they said come true? If you get off of me, I'll get up. If you wanna understand me, I'll get up. If you really wanna help me, get up, but in Jesus' name, I'm gonna get up. If you get off of me, I'll get up. If you wanna understand me, I'll get up. If you really wanna help me, I'll get up, but in Jesus' name, I'm gonna get up. The people who are talking to me.